Category E6 Sports Broadcaster of the Year, Joe Malloy.
Well, this is a different coming out than any other.
It is, yeah.
Because I was in the States and I was watching Missouri play before they got to the Cotton Bowl. And I noticed this guy because he was very flamboyant and, you know, a bit of a showman. Is this, you know, what is the motivation for coming out? Because there are plenty, you know, it's acknowledged in the United States of America that there are plenty of homosexuals playing in any of the major sports. But I mean, you just look at it, and like, I mean, you know what Eugene's saying about, you know, nobody else has come out, you know. So you do a survey of the hairdressing industry and find out how many heterosexuals work in that, you know. So professional sport, by its very nature, doesn't promote, you know, you know, sort of a wide range of people who are homosexual, and you know the environment that they're in isn't something that they're very interested in. You know what I'm saying?
How do you mean their environment isn't something they're interested in?
Well, I don't know. How many homosexual men play professional sport?
Well, I would presume more than the zero who've
come out. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Quite a few. I mean, statistically, 10% of the population.
Correct.
So something in there within the margin of error?
I don't know, but it wouldn't. I would suspect that nowhere near 10%. You know, I would say, you know, in the smaller margin of 1%, because it's not an area that, you know, if you look at the 10% of the population that are gay.
But is that not quite a stereotypical view in itself, that because sport is manly, that it's less than the 10%? Is that not part of the stereotyping?
What are their interests? I mean, if you've ever sat down with, you know, homosexual people and ask them what their interests are, very often they have no interest in any kind of sport. That's my experience. I'm sitting down with, and I've done it on a regular basis, you know, they've no interest, you know, and the first thing they said, look, we know you play rugby or you have played rugby, and we don't want to talk about it because we've no interest in it, and we've no interest in soccer.
But I mean, that is stereotyping as well. I mean, there's lots of homosexual people who play sport, and
right.
So surely we should be talking about them. There, that's the issue.
Right. I mean, I don't know if I've gone on record as saying it. I certainly, the rugby, in my experience, and people will come on and say, look, we vigorously contest what you're saying. A rugby dressing room is a pretty homophobic environment. Yeah. There's absolutely no question. Like, and you know, people will say...
Well, people would say that what you said there was homophobic about gay people not being interested in sport, that was an offensive thing to say. Because it's based on stereotyping, it's based on...
No, Joe. It's based on my practical, and as not a generalization, that, you know, in every sphere of life, you know, and every year that you meet either a gay man or gay people in a social environment. And the way I look at, you know, sort of after talking, they have very little interest in sport. Very little interest.
But would that
in
be
sport.
Influenced by the fact of the, you know, the stigma, perceived stigma?
No, I don't think, just people don't have,
You mean it's something that
genes? I don't have an interest in ballet. I don't, you know. And
this stinks of being really, really offensive, Neil. It does, to talk about it in those terms. Like even saying they wouldn't be interested, they're not interested in sport. I mean, how many people are you talking about here?
But
it's a pretty small sample size.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm generalizing. I really don't. Mm. You know, and you know, a lot of people would sort of say, well, you know, sort of what you've said really is stereotyping. But I don't care. I'm here. I'm going to express an opinion, and that's what I think.
It was interesting, Francis, listening to Simon there, and he used the phrase, "Well, people might find out."
Mm.
And so it strikes me that young gay men, like the 15, 16-year-old that you're talking about, they have two options almost. One is they have to make this disclosure, almost like Michael Sam did with his teammates. Or two, it seems they live in a certain fear of people finding out.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, you know. But like as Simon said, you don't necessarily have to bring every aspect of your private life onto the pitch. One of the biggest problems, Joe, is that with team sports, you're going out there with a team against another team. The other team are looking for weaknesses in you. So you know, it's whether they perceive being gay as a weakness, or, you know, you get black players encountering similar issues.
Yeah.
If somebody's overweight, they're going to use any kind of jibe to get at you and try and bring you down, to try and psychologically bring you down so they can have an advantage over you. And the other aspect is that you're out there with a team of, you know, you've 11 out on the pitch. These players, you know, you have to have each other's backs and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I suppose there's an element of, you know, a brotherhood going out there on the pitch. You're all together. And that a young lad there, you know, might see himself as different if he comes out as gay, and this, he might not want to kind of take that chance that his teammates would reject him in that way.
Which is terrible. I mean, that, yeah. I mean, that you've just actually verbalised the crux of the issue.
Yeah, and it's true. And and that goes back to my point earlier on about you know, the foundation of sport is all about courage and, you know, drive and getting better in yourself. And I suppose if people realise that about sport, about rugby and about football, that it's really about standing up for what you believe in. It's about achieving something greater than the norm, you know, and doing that with a group of people who are, in many cases, your best friends and whatnot. It doesn't matter if they're bloody gay or straight or whatnot. You know, you're out there, you're trying to win, and whether they're gay or straight doesn't dictate whether they can score a goal or not, whether they can kick a straight ball or not. You know, they're still a good player, whether they're gay or straight. It shouldn't matter. And unfortunately, that, you know, and it actually kills me in one sense, in that, because I always get phone calls around the time, you know, that some famous sports star or other says something about gay people in football, and it must be terrible for those players who are still in the closet, that they hear this big debate every time somebody or, you know, the whole gay culture is even mentioned in sport, because then it makes it even harder for them to come out, and nobody wants to be the first to come out, you know, to trailblaze, as Donal O'Cusack would have done maybe in the GAA. And it's very difficult then, because you're doing so on your own, you know, and you need a huge amount of courage.
And Francis, Simon mentioned that he hasn't experienced any abuse from other teams. You've spoken a few times there about how other teams will use perceived weaknesses to their advantage. What has the experience been of the Dublin Devils playing in a straight league?
Yeah, obviously we play in a straight league. So, I mean, the majority of the team, with all the teams we play are straight teams. And we, generally speaking, don't have an issue. Most guys are mature enough to understand that it's a game of football, that when you go out on the pitch, it's, you know, you're playing football. That's exactly what you're doing. I think once or twice we've had issues. I do remember one particular forward mouthing off to me at one stage, but I think he regretted it towards the end of the game. I did a bit of a Paul Gallivan on him coming up to the end. So, I mean, like, you're going to get mouthy guys like that who, they might know you're a gay team. They might use it to try and unnerve you. They might use it to try and, you know, bring you down a bit like that. And you, it can be when they're out on the pitch. I mean, this one particular guy, I think he turned around at a kind of a pivotal point, and he said, you're nothing but a bunch of pussies or something like that. And what he was trying to do was psych us out, you know, and you have to, in any sport, just realise that, stay focused on what you're doing, rise above it, don't rise to the bait, you know.
Yeah.
And like that particular match, we beat them 3-1, and I think that's the measure that will quieten any dissent, you know, is just rise above it and beat them. And we walked off the pitch that day with heads held high, and he didn't. You know, there was actually a lot of people there watching that particular match, and a lot of people would have heard his comments. And even some of his own teammates were kind of coming up to us afterwards saying, look, he doesn't speak for us.
Okay.
So, I mean, you're going to get the individual.
Francis, can I interrupt there? Does the individual really hurt? Like, it was interesting listening to Conor Cusack in the Late Late Show, and he came out of his house and somebody had been good enough to take the time to get up early that morning and write the word fag on his rear window. And he said that really hurt. That did provoke feelings inside him which were painful.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about a situation on a football field where it is attritional, it is war in a sense, but it's a very pointed remark. And I know it's just one person, but that must have an effect.
Of course. It does. And it was almost like when Rory O'Neill got up and made his speech in the Abbey last week, and he said that events like that make you check yourself. And he was talking about checking himself at the traffic lights because he had an incident where a couple of thugs threw a carton of milk over him. And you check yourself to make sure that you're not maybe, you know, looking as gay as you thought, you know. And there is that level of hurt, but on the day itself, on the day of the match, you don't think about it. It's probably afterwards you think about, you know, why he would have said something like that to try and bring you down. What is it that he thinks a gay person is? You know, what is it he thinks the stereotype of gay is? Because at the end of the day, you know, it becomes an academic argument for everyone when these comments are being discussed. But for us, it's our lives. You know, it's who we are. And it's words, and it's hurtful words that they're trying to define you with that are not necessarily us. You know what I mean?
Because
the word even itself, the word pussy, it's a terribly hurtful word that kind of indicates that you're not as masculine as you should be, you know, and that can be very hurtful because we're brought up as young Irish men, and certainly I was brought up in Kerry to think, you know, masculine is good and to be masculine.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you're any less masculine because you're gay. You know, you can be the most masculine man in the world, but you just happen to be gay as well.
So I was reading your autobiography over the last 24 hours. It's good stuff. There's a lot of a lot of good stories.
I used to play a bit of football myself, but don't go on about it like these two.
I mean, I'm talking about older stories. I think it's all about football once, didn't
I? That Liverpool team in the mid-90s liked to poo a lot on each other and on each other's things and just generally make life miserable.
Story. That's a great first question, isn't it? Fine.
The show was about come up on the stage and nothing controversial is going to be asked. Yes.
That's all I had to say about it, to be honest.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I mean, it was not me because I was obviously one of the young lads, but I mean, Neil Ruddock was probably the culprit, and he used to leave a few presents in players' toilet bags. I think. Good story about Ray's actually. When I obviously played for, you know, obviously under Graeme Souness, and he was the one who like brought the science to Liverpool, if you like. And he sort of involved, you know, where players, I mean, Arsene Wenger would have been the same, where all of a sudden, you know, players would have been eating fish and chips for the pre-match and excuse me, for the pre-match. And obviously Graeme Souness come because he's had a spell in Italy. He's he started weighing the players. And you can imagine all the skinny ones right at the front, you know, myself. Put a little bit on now, obviously. But, obviously, like, Razor and Jan were at the back. We're all queuing up, and obviously, it's come. Roy Evans has walked in. Roy Evans was obviously the coach at the time, and he's gone, he said, what are you now, Rays? He's gone, 12 stone, 12 and a half stone, boss. So he's gone, all right. So as Roy Evans has said that, and Razor said it, Mark Ledger, who was the physio, was going, come on, Ray's, come and have a go. So he's walked over to the scales. He's got on the scales and he's seen it. He went, bloody hell, Ray, he said, you're 15 and a half stone.
What do you have to the night before?
Well, then Roy Evans went, he said, bloody hell, Ray, he said, what have you had from there to there? And then Roy Evans has carried on talking. He's gone, he said, Ray, he said, I'm not being funny. He said, what is the lightest you've ever been? And Ray's has gone. He said, you might struggle to believe this, boss. He said, but I was 1 7 pound 3 ounces.
So this was all going on. You had arrived into this scene and you were the first millionaire teenage footballer. So, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for telling me. Huh?
No worries. They say you were the first of the Sky Sports generation of guys under 20, 21... millionaires, and for you it was a really sudden thing. You just emerged in the scene, and I've heard you talk before about the fact that, you know, you were hanging out with your mates and going to the chipper, and your routine hadn't changed, and you were at phone boxes calling people randomly and telling them that they'd won prizes and this kind of stuff.
You got this all from the book.
Have you read it?
Yes. I'll be honest with you, I mean, I never actually wrote
it. We did want to talk to you about what's happened at Derry. Obviously, it's not a nice thing for anyone to lose their job. The line we saw was that you left by mutual consent, which is this kind of vague footballing term that we hear now. Can you tell us how it all came about, Roddy? Because after, I think it was the...
No, I won't, Joe. I won't go into that, to be honest with you. That's not a discussion at the minute, you know. Still a bit raw. Still in a negotiation with the chairman, so... No, I won't go into that, Joe, but I'll get back to the debate there about...
Well, can we just stay with it for a second, Roddy, because people will want to know, in fairness. I understand that you can't go into the ins and outs of the situation.
Well, Joe, if people want to know, it's been in the newspapers. You know, mutual consent, we all know what that means. They have a new manager, right? The club, it's a fantastic chairman, best chairman I've ever worked for. Mm-hmm. Fantastic club. And I wish them all the best. And that's as much as I have to say about the whole situation, to be honest with you, Joe, you know?
Okay.
I'm sorry, Joe, I know you have a job to do.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to cut you short, but I'm just not in a position or in the right frame of mind to discuss it. It's only a week or two, you know?
Sure.
So I'm still a bit raw.
Sure.
But I will come round and I will sit down with you, Joe, and no one else, I promise you that.
Okay. Can I ask you a few questions, and if you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer?
Yeah, of course you can. Of course you can. No problem.
All right. Well, the chairman made the point that he met you on Sunday. He said, I met Roddy, and I think he expected the decision from the board. He took it very well. He's been very professional. We were both disappointed that the results hadn't been better. It did strike me, looking at your interview on Friday after the Shamrock Rovers game, even though you lost, you were very kind of buoyed up by the performance, and you thought that, you know, it was one of the best performances that you'd had so far this season, and you seemed like a man who definitely wanted to stay and definitely wanted to build on things.
Absolutely. I mean, the performance was the best of maybe a few bad ones, to be honest. But you could see the balance coming to the team. You could see where it was going. You know, a lot of stuff weren't out that was starting to come to fruition, you know. So, no, it did come. Look, I had a chat with the chairman. I respect him absolutely 100%. He's a good man, very good man. He backed me 100% in every decision I made.
Mm.
So, you know, when I sat with Philip in his house and we had a personal conversation, I thought, you know, this man, I trust him 100% as an idea. So we went with it and we shook hands.
Yeah. You talked there about the brilliant support you got from Philip O'Doherty, the chairman. Do you feel like you got support from the players through those six games?
I won't go into that, Joe. In fairness, I won't go into that, you know.
Yeah. It did seem as... again, you don't have to go into some of this stuff, but it just seemed like there was a lot of nonsense going on around the thing. Like even James McLean tweeting after you left and picking out your son even. It just seemed like there was a lot of nasty stuff going on, Roddy.
Well, look, we're in the public arena, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the public arena and there's no more opinions than me, rightly or wrongly. So you're open to ridicule, which is no problem. The stuff coming off the Twitter, I don't know, I don't get it, I don't go into that. But, you know, it was brought to the attention through my kids in school because of his profile. So they took a bit of abuse, so I had to take them out of school. And that like, you can do what you want with me. I mean, I'm long enough in the tooth and been around the block enough times to take stick or whatever. But when I see young kids or my wife taking it, that's when it galls me, you know. So for that reason, it was difficult. It was very difficult last week. But the kids were extremely upset. And I mean that. And when they're upset, I'm very upset. They're my priority, you know.
Do you still want to go into to stay in the game and stay in management?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 100%. Mountain Portugal here. Thanks to Best for Travel. I don't even know the people. Rang me up when they heard what was going on. Sent me and Karen and the kids away for a week out to Portugal. So, no, I'm ready to go. I mean, I've got nothing wrong. I believe I've done a good job. 13 games. Okay, we drew 7, won 3 and lost 3 in building a new squad, which I think is not bad. I've come off a league championship with Athlone. So don't doubt my own ability.
Mm.
Don't get me wrong, Joe.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, you know, if the opportunity arises, I'm ready to go straight back in, wherever it may be, because I believe in what I do. And I'm looking at Van Gaal, 64, I'm a few years after that. So there's a few years left in the old tank, you know, and the enthusiasm is right up today, actually, more than anything. That's when I'm taking your car, Joe.
Good.
I'm right up on it again, you know.
Well, I'm glad, because people can look at all this stuff and people like you can be kind of caricatures, really, and people in the game at large, because they have a public profile, can become caricatures. But, you know, at the end of the day, a man has lost his job, and that's not good for him, it's not good for his family, and it's a really awful experience.
Well, it is, Joe. I mean, you know, I mean, the lads even on off the ball there last year or whatever, you know, when they lost their job, it's public execution. But look, I'm not complaining. You know, we know as a manager you're going to lose your job. Every manager's going to lose his job, and it's a public execution. But when it comes down on the family, and it will. But look, I'm not complaining. I'm not stupid. You know, I'll go back into it tomorrow. I know what's down the road, the pitfalls and that. But at the end of the day, when you do an honest day's work, right, and you have three people 100% honestly, and you have integrity, and you use your experience in the game to make things better for everybody, and there's people within the game who have different agendas for their own gain, possibly. Maybe they're desperate, they need to stay in employment, and they might have a mortgage, you know, and they use whatever influence they can to oust or replace, you know, or undermine a player, a manager, a coach, an assistant manager. They're the ones that won't sleep at night. I've no problem sleeping, Joe. Absolutely no problem sleeping. I have a brilliant relationship with the man who employed me. Mm. He understands the whole predicament that myself and Philip find ourselves in. And that's all that matters to me. And when I sleep tonight, I'll sleep really well.
All right, listen, we'll let you go. Enjoy the sunshine. Thanks for taking the call.
Joe, it's bucketing down. I'm serious. I swear to God.
You can't catch a break.